but tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position, not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There was only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
And we say goodbye to Dan Lifshatz. Joe Murray there. The DraftKings Over-Under Show. It's Hardy here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. You're off to a good Saturday so far. It's beautiful outside. If you're playing today, it looks like, it depends on exactly where you are and what time you're going off. But it looks like you're good weather-wise until about 3 o'clock this afternoon. That's when things get a little hinky. Having said that, the only time I played in the last couple of weeks was Wednesday. And if you'll remember looking at the weather map this week, Wednesday was the day. Wednesday was the day when we were going to get thunderstorms and it was going to be nasty and there was a big system moving through. And I was on the air with Zolak and Bertrand until 2 o'clock. And I did not think we were going to be able to play. And not only did we play, not one drop of rain. It was as though the Red Sea parted. I'm watching the weather map on my phone, the radar, and where we stood in the parking lot over at the Cape Club, it was as though they kind of separated for a moment, and it passed right over us, and never got anything. The issue that I had on Wednesday playing, and I have a question for you here this morning, that we'll get to in a moment, is when you play pretty much at your worst. And that was as bad as I've played probably, well, certainly this year. I haven't played a lot. And I would go back to a good chunk of last year. I played poorly, very, very poorly on Wednesday. But my partner and I won the match, which begs the question, would you rather play well and lose the match or play poorly and win the match? I'll give you my answer in a moment after I run down everything we're going to be talking about here this morning. First and foremost, the Travelers Championship going on right now. TPC River Highlands, Cromwell, Connecticut. Phil Mickelson is your leader. We've got a lot here on Phil to talk about. Some testing on the PGA Tour. We'll talk about that. Phil's exemption into the U.S. Open. That just came down in the last few days. Later on in the show, Bob and I'm going to mispronounce his name, just so you know right now. I'm going with Winskowitz, Bob Winskowitz, who is one of these maniacs who decided he can take on the big manufacturers in golf and create his own line of not a putter, not a golf ball. We've had plenty of golf ball guys on over the years. The 3-Up guys were fantastic and they had a good product, but it's tough. It's really tough when you're going up against the big companies. Bob Winskowitz has come up with his own golf shoe. I know. How? Why? What is it? We'll find out when we talk with Bob here in a little while. Also, Winnie McCabe, who, as I understand it, Winnie is part of the Brown University women's golf team, or was part of the Brown University women's golf team while they still had a golf team. Winnie's got an interesting story. We're going to talk with her later on in the show. But first things first here. And feel free to call in at any point here this morning, 617-0985. You're playing this weekend. Let's say it's your regular match, your regular foursome. Or it's just, you get to the course, you're not even planning on having a match, but you decide at the last minute, you know what? Oh, this will work. He and I or she and I will play you two, and, that'll be the match, and we'll get strokes here and here, or we'll just play a straight up, whatever. You play poorly, but you play well enough. And again, this, I'll use my own experience here when we played on Wednesday, I didn't make so much as a par until the ninth hole. And this was after we were closed out on the front, 2-1. We lost the front. But I did make a par on 9, so that when we made the turn, we were only down 1 in the match. Made a couple more on the back. And, I mean, I won at least one hole with a bogey. This was the type of match it was, and we ended up winning it. And I ask you, would you rather play well and lose or play poorly and win the match? I'll give you my answer right now, because recency bias. I'll take the playing poorly and win the match, and here's why. Even when I play well, I will go back and kick myself for not playing better. At my low round ever, I go back and think about how it could have been even better had I not bogeyed this hole, had I not blown a birdie putt 6 feet past the hole and missed the comeback, things like that. So you're always going to second guess yourself, shots, holes, different moments in a round where you quote unquote play well. But you know what? Thinking back to it, man, I really pulled that approach shot out of my ass on 9 to win that hole so that we made the turn only down 1 in the match. And you know what? That scramble bogey that I made on 14, you know what? That was some good golf. I can talk myself into, you know what, you played poorly, but you played well enough when you had to win the match, and y'all knew what you were playing for. So, okay, I'll take the playing poorly and win the match. Which would you rather do? All right, so think about that. Call in with your answer if you want to here this morning, 617-779-0985. Okay, Travelers Championship. As I said, Phil Mickelson alone atop the leaderboard after 2 rounds, 13 under par. He fired a 64 in the opening round. Yesterday, he goes out and matches that with a 63. And consistency here is the key for Phil, because there have been some low numbers put up at TPC River Highlands, especially in the first round. Second round for Phil, only one bogey on the card. The second hole, the par 4, he made a 5 there. But the birdie on the par 3 fifth, you know, anytime you can put a 2 down on the scorecard, that it's happened infrequently for me in my life, but that's nice. Two more birdies on the front, and then he makes the turn. It was birdie on 10, follows it up with 2 pars, birdie, birdie, birdie on holes 13 through 15, and adds another one on 18 to come home with a 30 on the scorecard. 63 in round 2. So once again, Phil goes 64-63 to take the lead there on the par 70 River Highlands TPC course in Cromwell. As I said, there are other players who are out there, and they just went lights out in the first round. Mackenzie Hughes is the best example, who shot a 60 in the opening round, but backed it up with a 68 yesterday. Will Gordon shot a 62 yesterday, but 66 in the first round. In terms of consistency, you know, Brendan Todd with a 66-65, same for Mark Leishman. These guys are all fantastic players, and there's nothing wrong with those scores. But, you know, Phil is out there, admittedly, not as long as some of these other guys who are hitting the ball. Bryson DeChambeau out there doing Bryson things again this week with his length off the tee. Rory McIlroy, no slouch when it comes to driving distance. But Phil, the model of consistency out there, and he has the 36-hole lead. Last time he did was at Pebble Beach, 2019. Also, not coincidentally, I would say, or coincidentally, if depending on how you feel about Phil's game, the last time he won on tour. Here's the thing that we're hearing about Phil now. If Phil were to win this tournament, Phil Mickelson would be the fourth player in history to have wins in 4 different decades. My question to you, now, listen, it's of course impressive because it speaks to the longevity. And Phil is already at the top of another list that I think you need to talk about when you're talking about, you know, wins in decades. Because obviously, Phil has the benefit of beginning his career at a time that was early in an, or late in a decade, and then now is playing at an early part of another decade. I'm not saying it's a silly stat, but some of the other players on there, by the way, the other three players, Raymond Floyd, Sam Snead, Davis Love III, and Phil Mickelson is already fourth on the list in terms of longest time between his first and last win, 28 years and 29 days. Now you think, well, how is it that, you know, guys like Tom Watson or Jack Nicklaus don't make it onto the list? They're close in terms of the longest time between first and last wins, but they didn't do it on the cusp of another decade, in a year starting with zero or a year that ended in nine. You understand what I'm saying? So for Tom and Jack, both of them, their longest time between the first and last wins, the length between their first and last wins, very close. 23 years, 10 months, and 24 days for Watson. For Nicklaus, it was 23 years, 9 months, and 27 days. Jack won the 62 U.S. Open, and then he won the 86 Masters. And guys like Phil, he had the benefit of, you know, winning in both, you know, the 90s, the thousands, tens, and he's so, but he hasn't reached that four-decade mark yet because he had a win early in the 90s. You understand what I'm saying? He would have been better off in terms of this particular record, getting his, you know, being a couple years younger and winning that in 89, and then he would have the four-decade mark, no problem, because of the way we think of decades. Anyway, it's still an impressive stat. He's still already on the list in the fourth all-time in terms of the longest time between his first and last wins. But if he wins this weekend, he will have that, not altogether, but somewhat trivial distinction of being only the fourth player in history to win in four separate decades. Okay? All right. For what that's worth. A little bit about the testing that went on this week. Players who had to withdraw, what they're thinking about testing on the PGA Tour, how they've changed it. We'll get to all that here as we continue on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Constantly hitting it from the rough. This is the show for you. The Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's Hardy. We have some coronavirus on the PGA Tour and some testing results. I'm going to get to that in a minute. First, a little bit more on Phil Mickelson, who's got 36-hole lead there at the Travelers Championship in Cromwell, Connecticut. Good news for Phil this week. He found out that he got into the U.S. Open. Now, you may say, how is Phil not already in the U.S. Open? Let's not forget, Phil has never won the U.S. Open. Tiger reminded us of that during the match, the Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady match. But you don't get a lifetime exemption if you win the U.S. Open anyway. It is not something like the Masters where you can just keep showing up until you decide, you know what, I really probably shouldn't do this anymore. You get a 10-year exemption for the Open if you win the U.S. Open, but Phil's never won it. And there are other benchmarks you have to get. So essentially there were 60 spots available for U.S. Open contention this year. As we got into the season and the USGA decided they weren't going to be able to have qualifying tournaments, sectionals, anything else, they had to expand the criteria for the field. So instead, they decided to start, you know, moving the goalposts a little bit, which, I mean, based on the way Phil Mickelson is playing this weekend, yes, you know, he should probably be there at Winged Foot and play anyway. And I think odds are that Phil would have figured out a way to get in. But he was at 61 on the 60-person cutoff. They used the official world golf ranking originally. So Phil, as the USGA decided to expand it and get, you know, fill out the field a little bit, boom, he got himself in. So good. I mean, look for Phil Mickelson there when the tournament goes off September 17th through the 20th at Wingfoot's West Course there in New York. All right. In terms of testing on the PGA Tour, we all know what happened with Nick Watney last week. And initially, I thought maybe I was a little unfair. Well, not initially. Initially, I said, Nick Watney, what are you doing showing up at the golf course when you didn't feel well? And then more on the story started to come out. And I still don't know that he should have gone to the golf course there at Harbortown last week. But it was interesting in terms of how Nick Watney found out he was positive for COVID-19 and that he wears a device. Tucker, is it called the Whoop? Is that what that thing is called?
Correct, yeah. And it's a Boston-based company, actually.
Yeah. Somebody at the radio station actually works for
Matt Whoop. McCarthy.
Yeah, McTakey works for Whoop. Okay. So credit to Whoop, because Nick Watney got up. He said he didn't feel bad, but he didn't feel great. But his Whoop told him that he was breathing two more times per minute, I think, during the night than he normally does. And that's one of the indicators that you could be dealing with some kind of a respiratory infection, something or other. He contacted the PGA Tour and they said, how do you feel? And he said, not bad, but not perfect either. So they said, why don't you come to the course, get a test, hit the range, roll some putts, we'll find out. He did that, and that's when he got the test, and that's why he felt bad, because he did come in contact with a couple other players, you know, talk to guys in the parking lot and walk past him and whatnot. The PGA Tour dealt with that, and then they had a couple other things to deal with this week. Brooks Koepka withdrew because his caddy tested positive. Graham McDowell withdrew because his testy. Different injury than coronavirus. He tested positive. His caddy tested positive. And then we had another player test positive. Denny McCarthy withdrew along with Bud Cauley, who was paired with McCarthy for Thursday's round. McCarthy said, I was feeling pretty tired and sore after the round. Didn't think much of it because I'd practiced a lot on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then he woke up in the middle of the night after the round, after his first round. Additional aches and soreness. I sensed something was off. So I got tested before I went to the course. PGA Tour said they did an additional 16 tests on Friday for those who came into contact with McCarthy, including Bud Cauley, who was paired with him, who tested negative twice on Friday, but withdrew anyway. Now, that seems like a really selfless act. I will say this. Cauley was only one under for the tournament based on the scores these guys are putting up on that golf course. Imagine that. You go out and shoot a 69 on a par 70 course, and you're essentially out of contention. But that's where he was. And he said, you know what? I won't go. I just spent 4 hours on the golf course paired with a guy who tested positive. I don't know that other guys are going to want to play with me. So he withdrew. Caddies were fine, and other people who who came into contact with him were fine. But the PGA Tour, after you know, a couple of these positive tests for Watney and for the caddies of Brooks Koepka and Graham McDowell, they said, okay, we're going to ramp up the testing a little bit here. And it mostly has to do with, you know, how you get to the tournament. You know, are you taking the charter? Are you doing this? We're going to test you earlier and more often, and we're going to be a little more proactive in terms of the testing for people who would come into contact. There were other people who withdrew this week. Cameron Champ had tested positive. He withdrew. Chase Koepka, who is Brooks' brother. Chase Koepka got in to the tournament on a Monday qualifier. He also withdrew because Brooks Koepka withdrew because Brooks Koepka's caddy tested positive. So I think they're finding a pretty good balance here of being really, really cautious, but they're not shutting down the tournament. They're not shutting down the tour. They're doing the contact tracing. Other guys are taking it upon themselves to withdraw if they think that they might present any kind of a risk for other players. And once again, everyone is watching the PGA Tour And the other sport, there's only a handful. It's NASCAR, and in another week and a half, we'll have hopefully MLS resuming in Orlando. But everyone will be watching these first sports back to see how they conduct their testing, what happens after a player or a caddy or anybody on staff tests positive, and how you proceed after that. And I think so far they've done a pretty good job. All right. As I said, later on the show this morning, Winnie McCabe, who is a golfer, Dover Sherborne high school standout, went to Brown University, played golf there for several years, and then things went bad at Brown University for a number of their athletic programs. We're going to talk with Winnie a little bit later in the show. But first, a gentleman who has decided he can build a better mousetrap, in this case, a better golf shoe, Bob Winskowitz. We're going to talk with him next on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
If you want to play below par, keep listening. This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. Joining us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Let's see if I get this right out of the gate here, Bob. Bob Winskowitz.
Oh, perfect.
Did I get it?
You got it. You got it. You want a free pair of shoes.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about these shoes. Bob Winskowitz is the man who says, golf shoes, garbage. I can build a better one. So that's what you've done. And the name of the brand, again, talk about funky spelling, Squares, Squairz. But you pronounce it Squares, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so Bob, first of all, thanks for being on the show. Second of all, a golf shoe. What prompted you to say, FootJoy, Puma, the Travis Matt, whatever these guys are doing, I know what golfers need in a golf shoe. I'm going to go do it.
Yeah, back in my career, I worked for Arnold Palmer for a number of years running their sales and marketing. And, it was interesting when we built equipment back there, we used to present them to Arnold himself, and he'd say, look, what's in it for consumer? What's there for the golfer? What helps them play better? And I looked at what was happening back in 2009 when the spikeless shoes came out. And you could do all the research. It's online. If you're wearing a spikeless shoe, you're losing at least 12 yards of distance. I know it sounds hard to believe, but somebody like a Ben Hogan understood what ground connection is and where distance actually comes from. So Ben Hogan had 28 cleats on the bottom of his feet before he left the game. He had an extra cleat put on the bottom of his forefoot on his right foot so he could push off and create that torque, and torque translates into distance. So when I saw them building a spikeless shoe, I said, they're not doing any favors for the golfer. And then the next thing was when they went to these lightweight shoes. Lightweight, another word for lightweight, is taking structure out of the shoe. You take structure out of the shoe, and today's golfer's got a very aggressive swing. And when you look at somebody like a Rory McIlroy or a Tiger Woods, what they do is when they're swinging through the ball, their head will drop about an inch and a half, and they're forcing that pressure down into the ground to make that connection such that they can create the torque and the distance. If you've got a flimsy shoe made out of these fabric-like materials, you're not going to have the stability, you're not going to have the balance, and you're not going to have the ground connection. So with all that said, I said, look, there's got to be a better way.
Okay, so Bob Winskowitz here, Squares Golf Shoes. Now, I'm looking at them online. This is the only place that I've seen them so far. And you're right. You absolutely are, have gone away from the trend of spikeless golf shoes, which, you're saying all this. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, I've been wearing spikeless shoes for 8-10 years now. Yeah, that's about right. That's one thing. But the other thing, and where you get the name of the shoe, I believe, is the squared off toe on the shoe. What's the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, but and you're right. A lot of people did transition to a spikeless shoe because they didn't think they could have spikes in comfort. They seem to believe that they can work against each other, and we set out to prove that wrong, that you can have comfort with spikes because those spikes give you the ground connection. So for me, I always was challenged with setup and squaring up to the shots. And one day I was out hitting balls with a friend of mine. I had come from work and wearing a pair of square-toed dress shoes. And I felt as though I could position myself parallel left, really line myself up to the target line and see that alignment. And the second thing is I felt a little more balanced. So it kind of hit me at that point to start with a square-toe shoe. But from that point forward, we looked at the design, and because of the square toe, your toes can sit naturally in the shoe. Unlike any other golf shoe out there, your toes are sitting flat, whereas everyone else, they're angled to the center of the shoe. And once you do that, you start losing range of motion for the feet and balance. So now that your toes can sit naturally, we also widen the base under the ball of your foot. That inherently means you've got more balance and stability. Why? Because you've got a larger platform. Now, the industry's been after that for a long time, to expand the base under the ball of your foot. But if you start out with a rounded toe shoe, it's kind of going to look like a clown shoe because you start with rounded, now you really widen the base.
Right.
The square toe, it's going to look symmetrical.
Okay, so I understand that the square toe helps with, like you said, the alignment, and your foot feels better in a square toe, according to you, which makes sense. I guess my question would be, Bob, why don't all athletic shoes, or all shoes for that matter, follow that square-toed model? If that's the way your foot naturally, you know, fits into a shoe, why isn't everybody doing this?
It's starting to come about. You'll start to see some of these major sneaker brands widening up the base of the shoe. And you'll also find that a lot of people today will go out and get a wide shoe. And they just want that more freedom, that more balance, that more comfort in the shoe. So it's happening. It's happening. And when we looked at this for golf shoes, we said, geez, if we can make, you know, the toes sit naturally, you're going to get that feeling, that sensation of better balance. And it's like Sir Nick Faldo says. Nick Faldo says you can't find balance during the swing.
And to that end, Nick Faldo, who is like, you know, right there front and center on your website there at Squares, SQAIRZ.com. Did he reach out to you or did you reach out to him?
Yeah, it's a really cool story. And, you know, it's one of those things you always hope for. In fact, he reached out to us. As you probably know, he's got his show he does on Monday nights called the Faldo Formula. And one of the things he teaches is the mind, the body, and the swing. And he tries to do these exercises to perfect balance, stability. So he was doing this exercise on one foot, swinging the other foot behind him and swinging his arms out, almost like a crane-like. And he couldn't balance himself. And so he put on a tennis sneaker and found he could balance himself a little better. So from there, he went on to the Internet, and he Googled stable golf shoes, and Squares came up. He called his agent and asked his agent to find out about the company and get him a couple of pairs of shoes. And we sent him the shoes. About 3 weeks later, we get a Zoom call with Sir Nick, and we get on the phone. We start talking about the technology. He leans back in his chair, and he says, "These are the best golf shoes I've ever worn. People just don't understand that the swing is built from the ground up." That's how it all began.
Wow. Ed, do you have to call him Sir Nick in casual conversation?
You know, we had the pleasure of filming our commercials with him that's going to air on the Golf Channel in July. And so we're out there, and I wasn't sure, so I took the safe route and started calling him Sir Nick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know what? Better safe than sorry. All right. Yeah. He says best golf shoes I've ever worn. Golf.com says the best golf shoes for comfort. The Squares 2020 also enhances balance and stability, and best golf shoes 2020 in Golf Digest. I can't believe I haven't heard of them before. Bob, are these in stores, or are you guys just doing online sales right now?
Just doing online sales. And we launched these back at the end of January at the PGA show. So it's just really starting to come out. And, you know, it was quite interesting when you mentioned some of those stats. We just finished up some independent testing with Sir Nick. And then we had about 8 golfers come in to do some testing. And they hit balls in there, FootJoy's, Echoes, Michael Jordan's, and Adidas. And through the independent studies, wearing squares, the golfers picked up on average of 2.2 miles per hour in swing speed.
Get out of here. Come on. 2.2 miles per hour in swing speed and club head speed.
4.8 miles per hour in ball speed, and on average, 8.8 yards of distance.
Get out and with the shoe. Because they changed their shoes, they picked up 8 yards?
That is correct. So think of the spikeless shoes that you're wearing, and then you take a shoe like this. Now think about this. If you've got balance and stability, you're going to get more consistent face strikes right in the center spot because you're balanced and stable. With the cleats and the cleat design, the proprietary design, you're getting that ground connection. Think of it this way. If you were sitting on a chair and you pick your feet up and try to hit a golf ball, it's not going to go anywhere. Or if you're standing on a sheet of ice, same thing. The fact is that ground connection creates distance. It creates the torque that produces distance. And this is done by golf laboratories out in San Diego, California. A gentleman by the name of Gene Parenti did the studies, independent studies. We've got it in writing. And Sir Nick, you'll find that in his interview, Sir Nick is saying the same thing. He saw it for his own eyes.
You know, I'm starting to think, you know, the last couple of shoes I've owned and worn that I really like, one of the things I like about them is like, oh, they're so comfortable. You know, you can wear them, you know, to and from, and you can wear them and, you know, they don't even feel like golf shoes. That might be an issue. That might be part of the problem. Like, who cares if they're comfortable to wear on the plane? How do they help you play golf?
Well, that's it. You know, people don't look at shoes as equipment, but they are. Yeah. They're as important as the golf club. I mean, golf clubs are regulated today. The spring effect on a golf club is regulated. The shafts are regulated. The golf ball's regulated in distance. They're commoditized. And the USGA says so. Now, where's the last frontier in distance? You think about the tour players today. They do athleticism. They work out. They've equipment calibrated. But they really do a lot with pressure plates and footwork. Why? Because that's something that they understand. You can get more out of the golf swing with your feet and foot movement and footwork. And that's the new frontier, I believe. And we're trying to change that narrative out there that, look, golf shoes are not an accessory. They're an important piece of equipment. Your hands hold the club and your feet connect to the ground. That's how the golf swing happens.
All right, Bob Winskowitz, Squares Golf Shoes, SQAIRZ, squares.com. Brand new, like you said, just launched at the PGA show earlier this year. So, Bob, it was a pleasure talking to you. You got me thinking about things, that is for sure. I appreciate the time. Best of luck. And what can I say? If it's good enough for Sir Nick, that I guess it's worth a look, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, Bob, thanks again for the time. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right. As I said, Winnie McCabe, we're going to speak with her next. Brown University Women's Golf Program. Some things that I think you might find unfair happening with that and some other collegiate sports, especially golf right now. We're going to speak with her next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Consider us your radio caddy, the Sports Hub Golf Club on 88.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. As promised, joining us here on the phone is Winnie McCabe, who I believe is going to be a senior at Brown University, originally from Dover Sherborne High School. Winnie is on the phone right now. Winnie, thanks for being on the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. Are you in Dover right now?
Yep, Dover. Got sent home from school in March, so I've been here since.
So, Winnie, you are on the Brown University women's team. And just so you know, this was not something new for you. Had a really outstanding high school career, Boston Globe, All-Scholastic, 2015-16. Same for the Boston Herald, 4 top 10 finishes. You played at the AJGA junior at Blue Hill. I'm looking at your scores here. Good grief. 72, 78, 73. I've played in those things before with junior players. you're a phenomenal player. How's your game right now?
It's good. Working on it. Won't be returning to playing golf in the fall as of now, but still continuing to work on my game every day.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. So what's going on with women's golf at Brown University? How did the season or how did things end when you left school, and what did you find out afterward?
So they canceled all Ivy sports, obviously, because of the pandemic. But on May 28th, we received an email from the athletics department saying, hop on a Zoom call in an hour. And when I opened up that Zoom call, it was the athletic director telling us that 11 sports were going to be cut effective immediately. And those sports were men's and women's golf, men's and women's fencing, men's and women's squash, women's alpine skiing, equestrian, and men's track field and cross country. And since then, track field and cross country have been reinstated. So currently 8 teams are still cut.
Winnie, what was the explanation for cutting all these sports? And by the way, we heard some of these stories coming out about, you know, various programs being cut at colleges last spring. But that seems a lot, especially for a school like Brown to just cancel the program. What was their explanation?
Right. So they framed it as an excellence in athletics initiative. They claim it didn't have to do with finances. But in some of the recent meetings, they've said that supporting 38 varsity teams is just not fiscally feasible to be competitive with the other Ivy League teams. So originally at 38 teams, Brown had the third highest number of varsity teams in the nation for Division I, behind Harvard and Stanford. And now I believe it's 28, maybe 31 now because track was reinstated.
Right.
But they claim that having those teams has been a downfall to the success of the athletics program, and with fewer teams that they'd be able to, you know, reallocate those recruiting spots to other teams and make those other teams that still exist stronger. So not sure where that came from. It came completely out of the blue to all of us. We had no prior notice. No coaches had any notice either. And they brought in an external consultant to review the athletics department, and that's the conclusions that they made.
Okay, so you were told that. Is there something else you believe that's going on that is a different or maybe a more accurate explanation as to why these programs and women's golf in particular were cut at Brown?
In terms of golf, I think that us not having a course on campus could have been a factor. We have to travel about only 10 minutes, though, so it's not too far. The Columbia team has to travel off of Manhattan to New Jersey, so that's about 45 minutes. So, I mean, I think transportation was one of the factors. And looking at all of the sports, most of them, all of them are individual sports. So I'm not sure if that had a factor, but they say it didn't. But that could have been something that was behind this decision.
All right. Whitney McCabe, who is going to be a senior at Brown University this fall on the golf team there. Were you and are you still on scholarship there, Whitney?
No, none of the athletes in the Ivy League are on scholarship.
Shows what I know about Ivy League anything. I'm a Michigan State guy, okay? We were there to have a good time primarily.
Yeah.
Okay, so no athletic scholarships. But
yeah.
you chose Brown for a reason. Was one of those reasons so that you could play golf there?
Yeah, entirely. I wanted a strong academic school with a Division I golf program, and I wanted to play for 4 years. And I think a lot of my teammates share those sentiments, especially the incoming freshmen. So they were notified of this. I feel worse for them because I've at least had 3 great years in the program. And they received this decision after they already put their deposit down for Brown and, you know, missed those chances to accept other offers at other universities.
Right. And where you may have not had a guaranteed spot on the golf team, but at least there would have been a golf team there.
Exactly.
And look, Winnie, I am
biased. Pretty much anyone listening to this show right now is biased in terms of golf, and nothing against fencing, but there's, you know, a certain amount that you have to put into in fencing, I would think, for a number of years before you can play at a collegiate level. But to be able to play at Division I level golf, I imagine this is something you've been doing since you were very young and pretty much dedicating your athletic career to, anyway, to this sport and probably not much else.
Yeah, throughout high school. And I am so sorry to all of the parents also who have been involved in the process, because my parents would spend the whole summer with me, driving me around to tournaments and flying me out to tournaments in the winter because I'm from Massachusetts. So to be able to play and get some experience competing in February and April during my school breaks, they would spend money to take me to Florida and spend all week with me training and playing in competition. And, you know, my teammates share those same experiences throughout high school and middle school. So yeah, everyone has devoted a lot of time and money to this. So it's unfortunate to see it crumble so quickly.
I can't imagine. I mean, my daughter is only 13, but, you know, she plays some golf. And if she were to devote that much of her time and get to a level where she were able to play at a D1 school and then to have it pulled out from under, I would be furious too. And I haven't devoted, you know, a tenth of the time that I'm sure your parents did to your career. Did you have, and do you have, designs on playing golf professionally after college?
Not in the near future. I think that I'll still continue to play in amateur tournaments and try and qualify for, you know, the U.S. Amateur and Mid-Am when I get to that age range, and maybe the U.S. Open. But as of now, I plan on pursuing a career in finance.
All right. And is there anything being done right now to reinstate the program? You mentioned a couple of the programs that were cut that have been reinstated. Is there anything in the way of a process, litigation, petitions, anything to try and get the women's golf and some of these other programs reinstated at Brown?
Yeah, so every team has had their own petition. Most recently, a few weeks ago, we retained the lawyer Jeffrey Kessler, who works out of Winston and Strawn, most well-known for representing Tom Brady for Deflategate and the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. So we have him on our side. He just recently sent a letter to Brown University asking for them to engage in a dialogue on how we can proceed on finding a middle ground, maybe looking at transitioning these teams to club status in a phase-out program, you know, giving current student-athletes and recruits the opportunity to at least play for at least one or two more years. So that's been sent, and we haven't decided yet if we're going to press further, depending on the university's response is how that will go.
Well, hopefully it won't take as long as Deflategate did, because you don't have that kind of time.
Yeah.
Unless you're planning on staying at Brown for three more years.
Right.
Winnie, good luck with everything. As great a player as you sound like you are, I hope to never meet up with you in a money match on any golf course. And I really hope that either the transition thing that you talked about happens and you get a chance to play again, because it really sounds unfair. And I wouldn't blame you for being not upset about it. Not that you sound upset. You sound like, you know, you've got a handle on things. But I think plenty of people are upset for you. And I just wish you the best of luck, because this doesn't seem right. And I hope things turn around for you and all the other people involved with the program there.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I've had about a month to come to terms with the decision. So either way, I don't have the option of transferring because I'm a senior. So I'm going to try to make the best out of my senior year with or without golf.
All right, Winnie McCabe, good luck to you. Again, going to be a senior at Brown University. Golf program pulled here recently, but that doesn't mean the story is over just yet. So Winnie, we'll pay attention and see what happens there. Best of luck, and thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.